The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Rules, monetary policy rules. Is that what the Fed needs, or would it be okay for the Fed to continue to follow a more subjective policy where it follows the twists and turns in the economy and debates until it comes up with a decision on the best policy to follow? Well, it's not too surprising that our next guest says, and said it very loud in a recent Wall Street Journal article. John Taylor is a professor of economics at Stanford University, a fellow at the Hoover Institution, a former undersecretary of the Treasury. His piece, "The Fed Needs to Return to Monetary Rules," is what we discuss now. John, welcome. And that's John Taylor joining us from Stanford University. And I think he's there now.
I am.
Well, good. Hi. I haven't seen you since I was out at Hoover for the big conference. Very, very interesting. Very high-powered, I'd say.
Thank you. Yeah, we accomplished a lot. And again, I appreciate you having me on to talk some more about these issues.
Well, you know, the debate is hotter than ever, I think, John, because as the Federal Reserve gets closer to the end of tapering its bond purchases, then the next step at some point, people aren't sure when it's data dependent. So is the economy strong enough, the Fed makes the first interest rate increase off zero. And the thinking seems to be after that process is underway, at some point, the Fed starts reducing that big balance sheet. What's wrong with this approach?
It's been changed so many times. I think it's added to uncertainty in the economy. The forward guidance is, in some sense, what you're asking about, the efforts to describe what is coming down the road, and it's been changed so much. And of course, the first attempt to give some forward guidance about the tapering created quite a bit of confusion in the market. So it'll be just about a year ago, May and June of last year. So I think that's the problem. The not having a laid out strategy has not worked. And what I think we know from monetary history and the history of the Fed is a strategy that people understand helps a lot. Like in the 80s and 90s until this period, we had that and the economy worked very well.
Well, so let's go back, because I think it's good to put this in context. When I started covering the Fed, just a couple of years ago, Paul Volcker was the chairman. And at that time, the Fed was looking at money supply. We used to go to the New York Fed every Thursday and get those releases and flash out the headlines, and the bond market would move all over the place. Non-borrowed reserves. It was a way of, and this was what Paul Volcker would talk about when he testified to Congress. That was one kind of a rule.
Yes.
And so what happened then?
Well, what Paul Volcker did is he created an environment of more predictability of monetary policy. It was a difficult job because the 70s, just to go back a little further, were quite hectic. It was go-stop monetary policy. The Fed would put its foot on the accelerator and then get worried about inflation and pull it back and there'd be a recession. And that went on and on with unemployment rising and inflation rising. So Volcker came in and did something about that. He changed the policy really completely, so it was more predictable. And you're describing a period of transition where he was trying to figure out the best way to do that. And that was a tough time. Remember, inflation, even interest rates got even worse for a while. But ultimately, he turned the corner. Inflation started to come down. It came down through the 80s, and that policy was continued for the most part by Alan Greenspan, and unemployment came down. It was a real tremendous achievement. But if you look at what happened, he didn't do all the go stop. He basically had a strategy, and relative to today, he didn't talk about it that much. People knew what it was.
Yeah, there's so much less talking about it publicly then. That was one of the biggest challenges of covering the Federal Reserve. Now, people would also say, John, that the Fed, maybe not formally, maybe not always consciously, but has kind of followed a very broad version of the Taylor rule. Do you agree with that?
I think it did when things were working well, to be quite straightforward about it. People have gone back and looked at performance in this period I'm talking about, the 80s and 90s until recently, and they've seen a close correspondence to the Fed's decisions and a policy rule like this so-called Taylor rule. Then there's a period, I think, beginning in 2003, 4, and 5, where they started to deviate from that. That was the period when rates were held very low. And things started to go bad. In fact, I think that's one of the reasons why we had the search for yield, the excesses in the housing market, and ultimately the crash, which was no joke. And now this recovery is, as you know, has left a lot to be desired compared to previous recoveries. And I think that is also related to the way that policy has been conducted, a very unusual way in the last few years.
John Taylor, he's professor at Stanford University, a fellow at the Hoover Institution, and the man who did all the theoretical work behind what has come to be known as the Taylor Rule. And John is here to talk to us about why he believes so passionately that the Fed will do better for the economy, better for the financial markets, if it goes back to some kind of monetary rule. John, in your words, would you tell us, boiling it down for lay people who just, you know, are not writing academic papers, what is the Taylor Rule? What does it do for a central bank if they follow it?
It's actually remarkably simple. It simply looks at what the Federal Reserve does, and that is sets the short-term interest rate, moves it up and down, and says that you ought to move it up when inflation's picking up or the economy's doing better, and you ought to cut it when inflation's lower and the economy's not doing so well. So it's, in many respects, just common sense. The thing that has made it useful to people in the United States and many other countries is that it says how much the interest rate should change. So inflation rises, how much should the interest rate rise? And that's what I think has attracted people's attention very early on, because it turned out to describe what the Fed did quite well, and especially in the 90s period, late 80s and 90s. And it's also been fascinating to people that when the Fed hasn't followed that, things have not gone so well.
We Charlie Plasser, president of the Philly Fed, who was at the Monetary Policy Conference along with John Williams from the San Francisco Fed and Jeff Lacker from the Richmond Fed, was in town speaking last week. And a follow-up with reporters, he was asked various questions about the Fed following a rule and even about the Taylor Rule. And I thought it was interesting. He seems to be saying that the Fed doesn't necessarily have to say, here's a rule, and if it says X or Y, we will do that. But it would help the Fed do now is say, here's the framework to look at our next decision. Here's our framework that we can say, okay, what is it telling us about what we should or shouldn't do? It isn't necessarily that it's just, what do I want to say? It's not didactic. It's not if this, then that. But he says it would help the Fed frame the debate better.
Oh, I think he's right. There's been so much talk over the years about this particular rule and others at the Fed inside the meetings. It's remarkable if you go back at the transcripts how often it's referred to. And what Charlie Plasser is saying is, hey, why don't we go public with this? Why don't we talk about how we use this and have a discussion about just the kind of thing you and I are talking about? I think it would be a tremendous contribution. I personally think that we should think about going more than that, though, because the experience of the Fed has been sometimes to go off and on these policies, and when it's off, things have not done well. So I think policymakers should consider a more fundamental way to change the system.
What would that be?
Well, one possibility is to amend the Federal Reserve Act to say, look, this is something that's worked. In the past, you've been told to say what your money growth policy is. That was removed from the Federal Reserve Act in 2000. Let's put something back in which you say, not the Congress, the Fed says what its strategy is and describes that. So require it, not just hope it happens, but require it.
When the Fed shifted into crisis mode, right, around 2008, certainly deep into 2009, first a series of interest rate increases. But then when it started buying bonds, that's when it got into this more uncharted territory. Was the Fed not still following some kind of rule? I mean, would it be, if even as simple as rule is a central bank, one of its main duties is to fight a financial crisis, right? And in fact, in a time like that, it's their
sure.
number one duty. And so then you just pull out the stops and do whatever you can.
Well, there's a few things about that. I have been quite complimentary about the Fed's actions during September, October, November 2008, where they did use classic central bank lender of last resort policies. My criticism is before that, where I think they added to the excesses, and after that, where they have followed a policy which is very hard to describe as a rule. It's, as we mentioned, it's changed a lot. Quantitative easing, very hard to describe what the policy is as they're exiting. It's good, I think, that they're saying what it is. But I think you have to distinguish the actions in 2008, and which are good for the most part, versus what happened before, which led to the crisis in many respects, and what has happened afterwards, which has made the recovery, I think, less satisfactory.
John, the Fed is data dependent. They say that over and over. And when you said, you look at inflation, if it's too high, you raise rates, too low, economy's weak, you lower them. So in some sense, even what they're doing now, are they saying that they're going to, they started the taper because the economy was strong enough, I guess, and unemployment was falling. They'll raise the key rate when the labor market looks strong enough. Why is that not some version of the Taylor rule?
Because it's completely imprecise and, I would say, ad hoc. I mean, monetary policy is always data dependent. That's nothing new. In the terrible policies in the 70s, they would react to higher inflation, usually too late, and they would react to unemployment, usually too late. That was reactive. That was data driven. What you need to have is a predictable way you react to the data, so people know it and it's steady and it doesn't keep changing. That's what financial markets could benefit from, and I think the overall economy, more importantly, could benefit from.
Explain to our listeners why, in your view and in terms of your research, the economy has suffered, the markets have suffered from not having a set rule that is publicly in front of the markets.
I think the first and foremost is that's what the evidence shows. Very careful research by monetary historians and statisticians has found that when the Fed follows a predictable policy, and again, the examples could be the 80s and 90s until recently, things work well. And when they don't, things don't work well. That's more than a correlation, in my view. It's a causation, because usually the change in policy precedes either the good times or the bad times. There's also just common sense reasons. If you're trying to decide what business to go into, whether to expand, whether to contract, you have to have some sense of what policy is going to be. You know the rules of the game. And all a good monetary policy should do is set those rules of the game so the private sector can do its what it's so good at, which is expand and create jobs.
Now, the Fed, as you note in this recent op-ed that you wrote for the Wall Street Journal, the Fed needs to return to monetary rules. The Fed already has a 2% inflation target, and now is talking. I mean, the FOMC has a forecast for where the federal funds rate will end up, which is about 4%. The question is, of course, how fast it gets there, when it starts. If we had a Taylor rule right now, or the kind of rule you're advocating, what would we be hearing from the Fed, in your view? What would policy look like?
Well, if they had been on this kind of rule for a while, the funds rate would already be above zero, specifically about 1.25%. I would think that the economy would be doing better, so I'd add that to it as well. But what is encouraging here to me is that there's a lot of interest in moving policy towards a more rules-based policy at the Fed. The chair, Janet Yellen, has long been positive about policy rules. What she says, though, is, hey, it's not ready. We're not ready for that now. Times are not normal, but in a way, that's for me a good sign, because it means we're discussing when, not if, we should return to a policy like this. And there's many others at the Fed who, not everyone, but many others who feel that way.
Well, I like to hear that optimism, and the glass is at least half full for you. You know, Janet Yellen was speaking at the International Monetary Fund today on financial stability, questioned by Christine Lagarde, who, of course, is the head of the IMF. And what I mainly take away in a nutshell would be the Fed realizes maybe there's risk to having an ultra-easy monetary policy over a long period of time, but this whole new the regulators, the Treasury Department, the Fed are watching closely so they can make sure that no excesses develop. Do you see any risk there? Do you share her confidence in this new system?
Well, of course there's risk. But remember, if you asked anyone in the Treasury or the Fed before the crisis whether they were watching risk, they would say, of course, that's our job, financial stability. So the question is whether the policies that have been taken recently are helping. And so we now have the very low rates, the short search for yield, the risk taking that that encourages, and we hope the Fed will be able to remove it, as is their intention. But if they don't, there are clearly risks, and we saw some of the dangers of this the last time they held rates very low in 2003, 4, and 5.
John, maybe time just for one more question, but I'm noticing one of the tweets I got as we were talking, this one from Professor_ Viner. He says he's not convinced about rules. The real world requires flexibility. Is there room for flexibility within a rules-based monetary policy?
Absolutely. First of all, rule doesn't mean you don't do anything. The rule is a way to describe how you're moving. It describes your flexibility. Moreover, anyone feels that if there's a real change in circumstances, the world's different, you've got to adjust the rules. No debates about that. So I think sometimes people think of rules as inherently rigid, but they're not. They're a good rule is flexible.
All righty. Well, John, thank you so very much for joining us today. What's your next book on?
I'm doing a good book now on what should be the next step on lender of last resort issues for the Fed. So we'll see how it comes out.
Well, we'll look forward to talking to you long before the book comes out, but maybe as you're putting it together along the way.
Thank you.
John Taylor, thanks so much. John, of course, professor at Stanford University, one of the top monetary theorists of our time, fellow at Hoover Institution. So thank you for joining me today, Kathleen Hayes. Vonnie Quinn's been out today. We expect her back tomorrow. Keep it right here. Pim Fox and Carol Masser are revving up their engines for Taking Stock. And don't forget, tremendous job coverage. Preview in the morning, 8:30 Eastern, breaking the news on surveillance. And of course, Vonnie Quinn and me, Kathleen Hayes, at 10 o'clock with the Labor Secretary, Tom Perez.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.